Due to the global outbreak of the coronavirus, the Voice of America is taking every necessary precaution to safeguard its employees, so our broadcast will look a little different today and in the near future as we reduce our staffing at VOA headquarters here in Washington. We appreciate your staying with us on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, you're welcome to a special edition of Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from my home in Arlington, Virginia, a suburb of Washington, D.C. I am Shaka Sally, and today's topic is a candid conversation on the significance of the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, an economic regional bloc based in Havarone, the capital of Botswana. Our distinguished guest is Dr. Stergomena Lawrence Taxi, the Executive Secretary of SADC, the Southern African Development Community, or SADC. Well, to be honest with you, Ndugu Stergomena, I would like to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much. I am equally very delighted and honored to be given this opportunity. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome, Doctor. Now, talk to me about the recent important developments in your region. I gather, for example, that in August, you reached a major milestone. You celebrated the 40th anniversary of the existence of SADC. Walk us through some of the highlights, some of the major issues that were discussed during that summit.
Thank you very much. Indeed, we are very happy and very proud as a region to have reached 40 years, this long journey. And maybe before I go to what were the major highlights of the 40th summit, let me begin by just explaining what is SADC all about, where we started and how we have reached there. We have a long history. The region, the organization has a long history, as you might be aware. Let me begin from April 1980, when the SADC Development Coordination Conference, SADC with double C, was established. By then, there was a declaration towards economic liberation. And then the intention was we had worked together as a number of countries within the region to fight for political liberation. And the intention was to make sure that all the countries which had not achieved political liberation, they do that. So through that cooperation, Namibia became liberated in 1990. And then the leaders decided now to form the current SADC in its current form, the Southern Africa Development Community, through a declaration in August 1992, that was in Windhoek, Namibia. The first one was in Zambia. So since then, we agreed that we are to cooperate to first to sustain our peace and security, because it's very critical for us, and the political stability, but also to accelerate development and economic integration. So since then, there have been a number of policies, strategies, protocols, which we have put together, formulated, agreed upon, which we are implementing. So I'll go maybe as we proceed, I may highlight some of the successes. So the summit which we had in August on the 17th this year, that was the 40th summit starting from 1980. Thank you. We may be seated. And among others, let me begin by saying that it was a historical summit in the sense that it was convened virtually. That was the first time in history of SADC, and that was because of challenges posed by COVID-19. But it was very important to have that summit. As a region, We agreed and we realized and we put together ourselves to say, here we are in a situation we are faced by COVID-19. That was since March when we had our first case in South Africa, which is the SADC member state. We said, no, we need to move forward. And as we move forward, what should we do? Immediately, there was a decision that from now on, we'll conduct our regional activities virtually. But the summit was a different thing altogether. Really? Bringing together 16 heads of states in a virtual summit, it wasn't easy. And it was a bold decision to make. But we managed. People ask, why do you feel that it was a difficult decision? Yes, these are heads of states. You have to ensure their security in terms of content, in terms of physical security as well. We live in a cyber sophisticated environment, so it was a big job and a bold decision to take. Now, the major outcomes of this summit, first, we had reached a stage where we are guided by two. Since the past 15 years, the region has been guided in terms of strategic orientation by two major strategic documents, which is the SADC Regional Indicative Strategic Development Plan and the development plan, indicative plan for the organ on peace, security, and political cooperation. So we had reached, this document had reached their end. So it was very important to have successors, strategic documents, to move forward our regional integration.
You talked, for example, about SADC having been born in April 1980. That is very interesting, especially because it seems to have coincided with the political independence of Zimbabwe, because the last time I checked, Zimbabwe was actually independent. Zimbabwe gained its political independence on April 18, 1980. Is that correct?
Yes, it is true.
Before that, it seems to me that those countries that formed the nucleus of SADC were referred to, if I remember correctly, as the frontline states.
That is very true, and there were nine countries which were independent by then, and those were the frontline states, namely Angola, Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, Malawi, Mozambique, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe, which gained independence at the same time. So those were the frontline states. Mm-hmm. And it's again because of the same reason, because it was now to make sure that those who were not independent by then, they should also obtain their independence.
And also, of course, to work towards the end of apartheid and essentially majority rule in South Africa. Is that correct?
That is very correct. And that was part of ensuring that those who are not independent by then, they also gain their independence. And that indeed happened. In 1994, when the apartheid system collapsed, it was because of the solidarity, but also the work which was done by the Southern Africa Conference Coordination, which was established for that purpose, among others.
I see. So what would you say that so far, if you could put your fingers on it, what would you say so far are some of the major accomplishments by SADC?
There are many. First is the sustenance of solidarity, and which also enabled Namibia, but also South Africa. Namibia to gain independence starting from 1980. That's where I'm starting from. But also the collapse of apartheid in South Africa in 1994. Yeah, so that is one of the major achievements. But also, maybe one may not see it, but for us, we feel that maintaining peace and security in the region is one of a major milestone, but also maintaining political stability is because of the solidarity we have, but also a number of our cooperation that we have put in place. The other major achievement is from the economic front. We established a free trade area, and we have managed to to increase SADC intra-trade. The speed may not as what we wished, but we are getting there. That is also one of their achievements. But again, we may, in terms of our strength is on the peace and security, because we have put in place mechanism of conflict management, resolution, but also democracy. As you may be aware, we are part of the force which is in the DRC under the United Nations. We have three countries as we speak, but there were others before these three countries which are there. We work together with the DRC. There were a lot of challenges, electoral challenges before the last elections, but we also supported our sister country to have peaceful elections. Yes, in the northern part of DRC is not yet stable, but we are still there helping them. We intervene in Madagascar. We managed to bring the different parties together, and then there was a constitutional normalcy after quite some time, which was mediated by His Excellency Chissano, just to mention a few. But also in Lesotho, we intervened. We are still there facilitating. There have been a number of change of administration, but all of them have been done peacefully. And now the orientation has been on industrialization. Notwithstanding have the free trade area, we realize that we need to enhance our competitiveness and our productive capacity to utilize the free market which we have established. But there are a number. Those are just a few achievements or milestones which we can say, indeed, we have been successful over the years.
What about politically? Because it seems to me that when you walk across the African continent and you basically look at the democratization process, it seems to me that on balance, SADC probably has the upper hand, because in SADC you have clearly had elections that are considered to be free, fair, transparent, and credible, especially compared to the rest of the continent. What is the secret behind that?
The secret first is the appreciation. We uphold democratic principles. That is part of our principles as enshrined in the treaty. But people sometimes do underestimate the importance of the SADC electoral observation missions. There's that perception out there that we just go there, it's like a formality. That is not true at all. Mm-hmm. And this also has added value to the democratic and the governance systems which you see in our region. Our observation is done in three phases. The first phase, you go there 3, 4, 5 months before. What you do, you just assess the preparedness of that country to go to elections with a view of establishing whether the elections are going to be credible. What we assess are the security situation, the legislature, the law governing elections, and also the political environment. And based on that, would there be any issues, we immediately communicate to our member state that these are the issues which we feel that you should look into before elections. During elections, we will assess the processes, but thereafter, again, we will assess post and provide the report. Now, when we go, we start the next round of elections, we always start to ask by assessing, did you improve the areas which were recommended for improvement? And the member states, they know that we are very serious with that. They take the report seriously, and they rectify what has to be rectified before the next round of elections. So that has helped a lot.
When you talk about democracy, how do you respond to some skeptics who say, in terms of democracy, there is an elephant in the room, and that elephant in the room is Zimbabwe. How do you react to that?
If we say that there is an elephant in the room, then we should say there's an elephant in the region, there's an elephant in the continent, and there's an elephant globally. Because democracy is interpreted differently. It depends on how do you want to interpret a democracy. And a democracy doesn't take, it takes a number of stakeholders to come together and say, this is democracy, and this is how we are supposed to move together. Zimbabwe, I have heard a lot about Zimbabwe, but the unfortunate part, people tend, now we have social media, people tend to listen to one party without listening to both parties, analyzing and say, okay, indeed, there's a challenge here in terms of democracy. Zimbabwe has held elections throughout, democratic elections, and even the last change of administration was done democratically. It wasn't the former president was forced out. That was agreed. He stepped down. So I don't understand when we say that there's no democracy in Zimbabwe. Maybe if I may be enlightened, what do we mean that there's an elephant in the room, which is Zimbabwe? For us, democratic principles have been upheld by all member states, not only Zimbabwe.
I happen to be one of those journalists that had the honor and the opportunity to cover the last election in Zimbabwe. And there were a lot of complaints, especially because one of the major complaints was that clearly the political playing field was not leveled. That in fact, you had the ruling party dominated the media. The ruling party had all the money that you need in order to campaign. The ruling party was virtually, at least in the words of some of the critics, competing against people whose hands were tied behind their backs and their legs tied together. How do you react to that?
As I indicated that we do our assessment, when we did our assessment, we interacted with a number of stakeholders. What you're saying, that was said by a certain segment, especially some of the political parties. But when you interacted with other stakeholders in the civil society, diplomatic missions, and other organizations, you had a different story altogether. But again, we had to investigate to get a clear and a balanced picture. And the information that there was no equal access to media, that was not correct at all. That there was excess use of forces, the military was part of it, that was not correct at all. They used police because that police is the institution, the security institution, which is entrusted with law and order. But again, The last election, one of the opposition party was not did not accept the results. They went to court, and the court ruled. So you have three pillars of government. They work independently. So as SADC, we respect the rule of law, we respect the constitutions of member states holding elections, and there are also electoral law. And as far as we are concerned, everything was done in line with the constitutional and the legislation. In the report, which I have just referred, that we normally undertake a pre-assessment, those issues were part of that. And personally, I had a meeting with the current president, and I present that report. And he said, I can see you're very ahead of us. You are saying that we did not amend this, we did not implement your recommendations of the previous report. We amended this law, this section, and he was specific to points. Frankly speaking, I felt very embarrassed that here I am. I'm using a report which I have gathered information from stakeholders, and here are the facts coming from the highest level. And it means that we have to do our job very well before we communicate. So sometimes when you get these reports, if you don't get a feedback and you don't balance your report, you may end up being really misguided. So that is what I can say, that indeed for us, we feel that Zimbabwe elections, all the elections have been done democratically, in line with the guiding legislation.
Let's talk about the challenges posed by the COVID-19. What are some of the challenges that so far have been caused by the COVID-19 in your region? And how have you been able to address some of those problems?
The challenges are multiple, as you know. At the beginning, we thought that our challenges may be COVID-19 it was health related only. But then we realized that that is not the case, and we moved swiftly. So first is the unavailability of drugs, but also equipment for COVID-19. But we have mobilized ourselves, and we are addressing that. But more importantly now is the socio-economic impact of it. We carried out a study, which was one of the issues which were deliberated upon by the last, they just ended summit. And it has been very clear that there are multiple challenges in terms of food security, in terms of increased gender-based violence, in terms of a number of economic sectors also has been impacted. Just to mention a few, tourism, trade, and what have you, just mention a few. But what we have done as a region first was to quickly mobilize resources to address the health part of it, but also to put in place measures to address the socioeconomic impact, and more significantly, which was very clear and which was the first one to observe, was the impact on trade. Because of COVID-19, there were a number of lockdowns. Mm-hmm. And we could not move. Movement of goods and services was a constraint, including essential goods for COVID-19. So what we did quickly was to put in place guidelines which enabled the region to facilitate movement of essential goods. But gradually we realized that COVID-19 is not a temporary phenomenon. It is here to stay. So the guidelines were expanded to facilitate movement of goods and services overall. And that has helped to a certain extent to contain the negative impact on our trade, but also to contain the negative impact on the balance sheet of our economies.
Talking about economy, I realize that, for example, South Africa has been very, very badly hit. Its economy, for example, has pretty much tanked. It has lost 51%. Doesn't that pose a potential problem of unemployment? And especially given that South Africa, in part, depends largely on tourism. And when you talk about the COVID-19, no tourist, sincerely, in their right mind, would want to visit South Africa, or the region for that matter.
Yeah, I wouldn't wish to speak specifically on a specific country, but that is very true that COVID-19 has impacted a number of sectors, tourism being one of them. But it's not only tourism. Manufacturing sector, because industry could not proceed, manufacturing sector has been affected. As indicated, also food security has severely been impacted. So there are a number of sectors which have been impacted. Obviously, that affects the economy as a whole, including employment as one of the subsectors of the economy, not only in South Africa, in a number of countries, Southern African countries.
So walk us back to the 40th anniversary. What did the summit ultimately decide on how to address these important issues of trade, of unemployment, of food security, for example?
The food security, we have a program which was we agreed as part of the study which I have mentioned. We had a number of recommendations in a number of sectors. In the area of food security, we agreed that we need to enhance the program which is there. But more importantly also to, because food security, COVID-19 is just one of them, one of the issues. But as you know, the region has been hit also by climate change. So there are a number of areas, I mean, a number of intervention in terms of adaptation, but also mitigating the impact of climate change as part of that program to enhance our food security. In the finance sector, there are also a number of interventions, including relooking at our microeconomic convergence, not to change, but to see what we can do in the interim, but also reaching out our partners that, okay, we have a number of programs with you. So we have also some financial arrangement. Let us see how we can soften the arrangement during this time while we are faced with COVID, the pandemic. So there are a number of issues which we agreed upon as part of that big picture of addressing the social economic impact of COVID-19.
Dr. Stagomena Lawrence Taxi, let's talk about you. You have made history. The last time I checked, when I was doing my homework, I realized that you are the first female executive secretary of SADC since its inception. If true, how has it been to be in that position, executive secretary of SADC, as the first female chief executive?
I was humbled to be appointed as the first female executive secretary, and I extend my gratitude to my leaders in the region, the heads of state of SADC. But that is also, we can take it as an achievement, because I had indicated that through our journey, as part of our journey of regional integration, we have entered into about 33 protocols. One of them is a protocol on gender. So this is a part of the implementation of gender in our region, gender mainstreaming, gender equity. Among others, the gender recognized gender parity, and the minimum threshold is 30%. So we have a number of our countries have reached that stage. We have some countries which have reached 50-50. So I was very humbled and I'm very happy. But what I have faced, it's mixed feelings. On one hand, you feel happy that you have this opportunity to serve the region. But on the other hand, also it goes with its only challenges, which you need to be prepared to address them.
How does it feel like, really, to be the first female chief executive? And what has been the response so far from the people in the region?
Whether we like it or we don't like it, it is very true that when you are appointed as a female leader, you have to understand that the first thing which comes to, especially you men, you'll be looking at me as a female. And then later, the next part will be now you're looking me at the executive secretary. So that was the first thing to say, okay, I have a double assignment, if I may call it assignment, I have to do and to deliver on my responsibilities as the executive secretary. But also I have another challenges of showing that I'm not a female. I'm a human being, like any other human being. Mm. So I have to be considered as a human being. So by working very hard to ensure that indeed you deliver, and you deliver on your mandate, and you move forward. So that is the only challenge which I normally see. But what you should do is just to be confident, is just to work, and is also to not to waste time or to accept people who would wish to drill you simply because you are a female. Just be focused and proceed with your work.
Time is not our best ally, so we'll go for a break. And when we come back, we shall continue with the conversation. So please, don't go away.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
Today's topic is a candid conversation on the significance of the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, an economic regional bloc based in Habarone, the capital of Botswana. Our distinguished guest is Dr. Stergomena Lawrence Taxi, the Executive Secretary of SADC, the Southern African Development Community. If you were to talk to us from the deepest better part of the bottom of your Tanzanian heart and soul, what would you say are the sort of qualifications, the sort of qualities that one needs, whether they are female or male, to become a successful executive secretary of the regional economic bloc?
First and foremost, integrity. You have to be a person of integrity. And integrity is very broad. Secondly, you have to be, I have said this, you have to be also to be confident. Also, you have to be, and this is now a Tanzanian part of it, you have to be humble. Mm-hmm. You have to understand that, yes, I'm a leader, but I'm a human being like anybody else.
You have to exude.
So humbleness.
You have to exude.
The humbleness is very critical.
You have to exude humility.
Humility and humbleness are different. Yes, you may call it humility, but I'm calling it humbleness. It's just to be humble. Mm.
And be a great listener, perhaps.
A greater listener goes without. It's not about being Tanzanian. I think that is for any leader. You have to listen attentively. But also you have to listen, but also to be understanding. You may listen, but if you are not understanding, you may just listen and it ends there. You have to listen. You have to be able to analyze what you're listening and how to respond at what point in time and how. So listening, it goes with a number of other characteristics or element which makes you a good listener, but also a good implementer after listening.
What is your day like, a typical day like? Could you please kindly walk us through a day in the life of Dr. Stergomena Lawrence Taxi? What time, for example, do you go to bed? And what time do you wake up?
I don't have a day like. It depends. And maybe even going back to the question before I go to the day, like when you asked about as a female executive secretary first, what did I... There's a point which I also wanted to bring about is that it's not true that there's also this myth that female do not support each other. It's not true. First, I got support from my leaders. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel anything from that I'm being treated differently from the leaders of this organization, mm-hmm. and I'm very appreciative for that. I got all the support. I got all the support from the team, but also from female leaders. I got all the support. So that myth isn't there. The challenge which I explained that sometimes you're looked upon as a leader, there will be few individuals who will be doing that, and that's where you should not be drilled. Now, what is my day like? It depends. It's this is a very demanding job, as you may know. So there, ordinarily, I have to wake up at around 6. I have to be in the office at 7:30. And then also it depends. I may work, the official time is 4:30, but I don't recall any day that I knocked off at 4:30. It will be always after 8. Sometimes 8 is maybe when I'm early. Mm-hmm. And again, it depends. Some of the days it may be light. You may be dealing with documentation. But some of the days may be very, very intense. Even if you're not reading a document, but intense you're in your mind because you have issues which you need now to address. Now you'll be struggling to say, how do I address this? How do I do? What approach should I do? What methodology should I do? Whom should I contact? Whom should I reach out? So it depends on the issues. And it depends on the day, but in most cases, it is every day is a busy day with a different dynamics.
Now, in your position, there are a lot of people who look at you as a positive role model, and especially a positive role model for the girl child. For example, some of the young girls and women in your home area of Mwanza, the beautiful...
Oh, you know my home area.
Yes, I've done a little bit homework about you. The beautiful lakeside shores of Lake Victoria. If there was a young girl right there and another one in Magomeni near Dar es Salaam, Munaz Moja, and they wanted to walk in your shoes, they wanted to be like you, what advice would you have for them?
First and foremost, education. Make sure that you work hard and you get the right education. When you're given an opportunity to go to school, please use it. Secondly, be disciplined as a girl. There will be a number of temptation here and there. Do not allow any temptation in your life. Be hardworking, and as you grow, allow yourself to be confident. Don't allow anybody to degrade you. So those will be my word of advice to a young girl.
Very interesting, Dr. Stagomena Lawrence Taxi. You also happen to be, in fact, to belong to an elite of intellectuals. You are the recipient of an earned doctorate of philosophy from Japan.
Wow, you know a lot about me.
I know some things about you. Who inspired you to look that far? A lot of people, they can't wait to get the first university degree and use it as a passport for upward social economic mobility. But you, in fact, dared to get a doctorate of philosophy. What inspired you?
My parents, especially my mother was a teacher. So maybe that's why I emphasize education. So for her, education was everything. My father was equally a teacher, but my mother was a teacher and she was my teacher as well. So you can imagine being a child of a teacher. Well, I don't know, those who have been children of teachers, they know what you go through. Because always you are expected to be the best. Even where you can't be the best, you're expected to be the best. But also my mother was not only being a teacher, she was, I'll be seen as if maybe because she's my mother, I'm biased, but she was a very loving lady. She's late. She passed away 4 years ago. And also a Christian. So those, a combination of those modeled me in a person I am now. And since my childhood, I have wanted to be someone. I have wanted to have the education which I can afford. I remember because of that, once before joining university, we went to the university at the same time with my young brother. Because of certain challenges, we found ourselves that we are in the same year. So I told my mother that I'm also going to, he was the first to be selected. And then I said, I'm also going to the university. I remember that day. I'll never forget that day because she laughed. And then she said, you're going to the university. How? I said, Mommy, don't you know that I have been studying because I made a blunder somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then she said, okay, you have my full support. Let me know what you want to do for you to go to the university. And indeed, I got her full support. And since then, I never played with my education again. And that is my role model.
But when you talk about a PhD, you are, in fact, not simply talking about research, but you are talking about what some would characterize as the moral equivalent of the intellectual marathon. You are talking about a program, frankly, that requires stamina, that requires endurance, that in fact requires nothing short of sacrifice.
That is very true. That is very true. And it requires, and maybe that's what you meant by stamina, requires the hard work and also want to be focused.
Focused, in fact, some people would say you definitely cannot do without perhaps focusing like a laser beam.
Mm-hmm. PhD is not a, you do the coursework fine, but the most part of your time, it is that you have to analyze. So it enables you to gain that analytical skills without even knowing that you're gaining those analytical skills. Because what you'll do, you're going to prepare your proposal. It took me maybe a year before my proposal was accepted by my professor. Mm-hmm. And that was also because of the different culture. Here I am in Japan. I don't know the culture, the Japanese culture, that this is the way you should be communicating. I'm coming from Tanzania. I'm a very straight person. I communicate as such. But that is not how I'm expected to communicate as a student to a professor. There's a way, and when he gives you feedback, he gives you feedback in a manner which you may not understand, again, because of the communication gap. So it took 1 year before understanding what exactly does my professor want? Where am I failing?
What was the language of instruction, if I may ask?
It was English, but it's not about the language. It's about the communication style.
Correct.
In Japan, they say what they call endure, that you should not be, you have to communicate in a manner where you are allowing your superior to give you feedback. You don't go there and now you want to show that I'm very knowledgeable.
You come up with hypotheses.
So it took that time, but then I managed to get that and then to be able to convince your professor, but also to show what is new that you're bringing. So that is not an easy job at all.
Now that you obviously were inspired by your mother, the good teacher, and of course she has since unfortunately returned to her creator. May her soul rest in eternal peace.
Amen.
Is that something that you would proudly recommend to the girl child?
Yes, and that is what I'm doing even to my daughter.
I'm doing
to my daughter, yes, without any hesitation.
Very interesting. You have been in your position for the last 7 years. And when you think about the 7 years that you have been the chief executive of the regional economic bloc, you must have come with a vision, the vision thing, in order for you at least to serve for the maximum 2 terms. Or you must have come with a set of priorities. What were those priorities, or what was your vision, and to what extent have you been able to accomplish some of that?
I didn't have a vision, but I had priorities. Because as an organization, when you enter into an organization, it would be very strange for an organization like SADC with that long history, without a vision. So my duty was to make sure that the vision is realized. But I had priorities. And my priority was to enhance economic integration. That was because my thinking, which is still the same thinking up to now, is that SADC is very stable. It's very peaceful, politically stable. But how can we capitalize this peaceful environment and political stability by accelerating economic integration? That was my priority. And I'm happy because that is what I did when I joined. We have a culture of introducing ourselves as new executive secretaries. That is what I tried to present to my leaders. This is what I think we should do. And I'm happy I received overwhelming support from almost everyone. And by then, when I joined, it was Her Excellency Joyce Banda. That was the first year. But then it was the former late President Mugabe. And then he said, I'm going to support you. But when you talk of economic integration, what exactly do you mean? Economic integration is very broad. Then I presented what I thought was my priorities. And then he guided me further. He said, very good. But my advice is that let us focus on industrialization. Because if we transform our economies, it means that the multiplier effects are going to be broader economically. So now, since you have started it and you have come with this proposal, go and prepare SADC industrialization strategy. I said, thank you very much, sir. I'm going to do that. And when I left there, that was in the middle. It was 3 months before he takes over. Then now we have a summit. The minister comes and asks, Madam, where is that strategy, the industrialization strategy? I said, Honorable Minister, a regional strategy in 3 months, how can I do that? Said, you have raised expectations to the incoming chairperson. He doesn't expect anything apart from the industrialization strategy. I said, no, we don't, we can't. And then I use my PhD now there. And I said, okay, what will do, Honorable Minister? We are going to present a concept note, which will highlight how do we want to drive industrialization strategy, based on which, if it is acceptable, then the summit will direct us to prepare as industrialization strategy. That's how it worked. But immediately after the summit was the concept note was approved. The strategy was we were directed to prepare strategy. Now I'm given 6 months to prepare a regional strategy. Those are the kind of challenges which I say the days which you don't sleep. You say, okay, I wanted this. I pushed for it. Now I'm in for it. How can I prepare a strategy in 6 months? But God willing, inshallah, we managed. I got support from UNECA. We had started talking about it, so I managed to get to mobilize the resources, both financial and expertise, and we managed to have the industrialization strategy, which we are now operationalizing, and which has remained a priority for the orientation of SADC since 2014. Progress is there, has been there challenges here and there, but we are moving toward the right direction. And that was the priority I had. There were a number of others, but that was my priority.
If we were to grant us a very brief report card about the last 7 years that you have been at the helm of SADC, what would you say, for example, that has been the single most important decision that you made? And what about the single most important regrettable decision that you also have made during the same period?
decisions. The decisions I make are at the secretariat level, mm-hmm. but the decisions when it comes to regional decisions, those are made by either the summit or council of ministers. My role is to advise. Mm. So one of them, the advice which I'm happy about is what I've just said. The development of the SADC industrialization strategy, which has been rolled out. We have now a number of value chains. We have a number of regional programs in terms of infrastructure, which are going on. So that will be the most single, not decision, but advice, which I'm happy about. Mm. a decision which I regret about, I have to think about it. I don't remember. What I can say that in any job, there will be up and downs. Mm. But the important thing, I have a very good team. Mm. I don't work alone. I have a very good team. We work together. And whatever challenges which we have encountered, we have managed to solve them as a team which is working together.
You know, it is said that as an individual, you could probably run very, very fast, but that together you could actually get very far.
Mm.
Now, you talked about how you have to think about the single most regrettable thing. First of all, just look at the priorities that you came with. I am sure somewhere there must have been an idea that you probably came up with and probably tested and tried, and it probably didn't pan out the way you expected it.
I've been lucky because ordinarily, an example should come to your mind quickly, but nothing comes to my mind.
Okay.
But I know that there have been challenges here and there. You cannot operate without challenges. You're frustrated, you want to move faster, but you cannot move faster because some of maybe that can be the what maybe frustrates me is that because this is a regional community and you make decision correctively, but when it comes to implementation, everyone will go with or her own pace. So that is maybe the most frustrating part of it. But eventually, and it's because you cannot say that you get frustrated as a human being. But when you reflect, you say no, because we need to move together. We need ownership. Member states have to understand why they should be doing this. So let me do some more work to convince them. And eventually you manage to convince them and they join and we move together. So maybe that is the frustrating part that you may wish to move fast, but you can't because you are the number of players who should be part of that process.
What about the average listener, the average individual in the audience of Straight Talk Africa, what are the basic qualifications in order for a country to win membership to SADC, to become a member of SADC?
Mm-hmm.
Any specific qualifications?
Yes, there are criteria. A country has to be politically stable. And then it means that the government are elected democratically. A country has to have, there should be a peaceful environment. There's also, a country should also be economically, I should not be economically stable, but a country has programs which are indeed, you're seeing clearly this country, this country is prepared to transform or to move the development agenda, socio-economic agenda. But the other criteria, which is not necessarily related to what I've just said, they should be geographic proximity with any of the SADC member states. So those are the four criteria if you are to become a member state. But again, ability to honor your contribution, your annual contribution. We wouldn't wish to enroll you or to to invite you to be part of us. And again, you cannot honor your contribution. It is going to drill the organization, both the secretariat, but also the programs which we have put in place, which we are implementing. We are very proud as SADC. This is my seventh year, as you have indicated, but even my predecessors, we normally get our annual contribution every year. And that is really a sign of a commitment of our member state to SADC regional integration. A number of regional blocs will be complaining about annual contribution, but that has never been our problem. And I think that's why even we can move in terms of implementation of our programs.
Given the criteria that you have shared with us in order for a country to become a member state of SADC, what is the problem? What is the problem with the application of the Republic of Burundi?
I knew that's where you're heading.
Really?
There's no problem whatsoever. It's just a fulfillment of the criteria. We had an assessment, and we have not given up on Burundi. We had an assessment, the country passed some of the criteria and partially some of the criteria. And then we agreed that, okay, in these areas which we have passed partially, please go and improve, and then we'll come and do the reassessment. So,
do you believe and are you confident indeed that SADC is on the right track going forward?
100%. But economically, we are moving. Socially, we are moving. Politically, we are stable. In terms of peace and security, we are also okay. And actually, not even okay is an underestimation. We are very good. So 100%, that's why I'm saying 100%.
Any aspirations beyond the chief executive of SADC?
Throughout my career, I have sacrificed my family. I have sacrificed my life, family in broader perspective, and the people are not going to believe what I am going to say. But my aspiration from now on is to have quality time with my family.
What about your daughter that you referred to a little bit earlier? Does she think at one time that she may want to walk in the footsteps of her mom?
I think that question should be asked to her. I cannot respond on her behalf. But what I'm happy about, she's very independent. She's very hardworking. So I just pray for her and commit to support her for her to realize her dreams.
Well, on that note, Dr. Stergomena Lawrence Taxi, I have to say once again that I was profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on this special edition of Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
Thank you very much. Indeed, this is a Straight Talk.
Did you enjoy it?
And thank you very much for the opportunity.
Our distinguished guest is Dr. Stergomena Lawrence Taxi. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta, SADC. And please, please remember to keep the African hopes alive. Thank you.